Part 3 of Healing the Inner Child by Grant Lee Morris of netburst.net. An older term for dissociative identity disorder is multiple personality disorder, MPD. Regardless of name, its existence has been recognized by researchers, at least as early as the 1800s. In a sense, we all have multiple personalities, and switch between them according to our circumstances. We would act differently, for instance, in each of the following circumstances. In the presence of a head of state. When alone with our spouse. On a night out with the girls or guys. When playing with children. When depressed. In other ways too, everyone has multiple personalities. For example, we might say, "My heart says one thing, but my head says another." The ability to see things from such different perspectives can be a significant asset. When indecisive, we speak of being in two minds. When dieting, we are not sure which part of us will win, the part wanting to be thin or part wanting to keep eating. In Romans 7, Paul devoted almost an entire chapter, detailing the battle within himself between the part of him wanting to obey God and the part wanting to indulge himself.
"I do not understand what I do. For what I want to do I do not do, but what I hate I do."
Romans 7:15. So having multiple personalities is not nearly as abnormal as it first seems. Moreover, dissociation is normal. In order to focus on the task at hand, all of us sometimes temporarily put unpleasant memories out of our minds, or tune out to such distractions as background noises. It is just that for some people this natural tendency is done to a greater extent. For them, shutting off awareness of certain distressing things is done so effectively, that a separate consciousness forms within the person, with part of the person knowing, feeling and thinking some things that the other part does not. Therapists sometimes call each distinct identity an alternate personality, or to use a term already introduced, alter for short. As mentioned, the term insider is also sometimes used, and some feel more comfortable with the term part. The personality that controls the person most often is usually referred to as the host. The distinction between host and other parts is seldom set in concrete. A part that has been host for years might suddenly feel overwhelmed or experience new trauma that causes it to go into deep hiding. Another alter is then forced to take over, or a new one is formed for the purpose. The new host might later on split and form new alters who see themselves as having split off from the new host, and feel more connected to the new host than to the former host. Over a lifetime, someone might end up having had several hosts. Sometimes more than one alter might simultaneously share the role of host. Since the host is the part most seen in public, other alters often sacrifice themselves to protect the host from distressing feelings and/or memories, thus enabling the host, the public face of the system of alters, to better maintain the appearance of normality. They also do this to free the host from oppressive distractions that would hinder the host's ability to perform important functions, such as succeeding in school or employment. A part might become host due to having the best selection of natural abilities for the role, but if for no reason other than having the most relevant experience, the host usually ends up with the best social skills and other abilities, such as work skills, needed for everyday living. So a change of host is not only usually precipitated by a trauma, it is itself traumatic because the host takes into hiding with him or her vital information needed for everyday living. The new host is left to flounder, having to try to pick up knowledge on the fly. The host might have had the most opportunities to develop, but every part of a person is important. While they remain separated, Each part has exclusive access to part of the person's intellectual capacity. To be whole, a person needs every part. Moreover, given half a chance, other parts can develop astonishingly, and in ways that the host could never achieve. People, hosts, who are just becoming aware that have DID, are often tempted to feel superior to their alters and regard them as little more than nuisances. A friend of mine who is himself a host, beautifully corrects this mistaken notion.
In my system, I'm the host. By that I mean I'm the one my alters laid their lives on the line to protect. I'm the one for whom my alters gave up so much in order to keep safe. I'm the one they held above the water while they drowned, as it were. They gave up living in this life and held on to agonizingly painful experiences and situations so that I could survive and move on, while for years they were locked away in the dark, haunted by those experiences without contact with the outside world. I owe them everything, and each time I communicate with any of them I do my best to treat them with the same respect that I would treat someone who lost their legs diving under a truck to save the life of one of my children. Yes, they can be very angry. Yes, they can be annoying, controlling, distracting, painful to live with, but so might someone dealing with the consequences of having lost their legs saving my child. Regardless of that anger, I would happily immerse myself in it, to give them 1 ounce of relief, especially after what they went through for me. It's the least I could do. The exciting thing is that I've found that as I treat them with respect, and let them know that their needs are important to me by working with them on getting those needs met, and allowing them time to just be themselves in a safe environment where they aren't judged, they heal. They start to realize that those situations they held deep inside themselves have now passed, and that they are now safe. As they are cared for, they start to use their skills to contribute meaningfully to our family, the whole person of whom I am a part. For example, I have an alter called Du, who is very fast at getting things done. He now helps when we have limited time to get things done really quickly. This morning he came out to help me get my kids ready for swimming lessons. He managed to get them completely dressed, bags packed, everything in under 8 minutes. Normally that would take me around an hour.
As mentioned, if you suspect you have an alter, conversing directly with them is the only sure way to confirm their existence, but that can be as challenging as trying to entice undercover agents to admit they have been spying on you, and freely tell you everything. Moreover, getting to this point with an alter is a life-changing step not to be taken lightly. Once one alter begins spilling the beans and finding acceptance, others are likely to become emboldened to likewise make themselves known, and your life will probably never be the same again. Even if, as I expect will happen, by the journey's end it proves highly beneficial, there will almost certainly be times when you regret ever starting this journey to peace and wholeness. I suggest waiting until you are fairly sure you are led of God in every step of the way, including your choice of counselor. On the other hand, doing nothing and so keeping alters feeling rejected and in more or less enforced solitary confinement is also strewn with dangers. In fact, doing nothing could be the worst mistake of your life. Alters typically carry so much pain that ignoring them might be all it takes to make them suicidal. I wish I didn't have to give this chilling warning, but to end up with a suicidal alter could be more than just unpleasant for you. It is at least theoretically possible for that alter to succeed in killing you, despite you wanting to live. The most knowledgeable people suggest you not act solely on the basis of written information about dissociative identity disorder, but that you seek an appropriately qualified and experienced professional. Despite my considerable experience helping people with alters, I should not call myself an expert. On the other hand, I know of only one infallible expert, the Lord Jesus Christ, and I plead with you to earnestly seek his guidance, before doing anything, and likewise before deciding for the exceedingly risky option of doing nothing. It is not uncommon for abuse survivors to go through life unaware that there are suppressed parts of them until one of the alters finally makes his or her presence felt when the person is beginning to heal. Alters have two pressing, but conflicting, needs. One is to burst out of the agony of solitary confinement by communicating with someone. The other need is to avoid further rejection and ridicule by remaining in isolated silence. When their host begins to seem more accepting of them, or they find someone such as a trustworthy, understanding counselor or friend who they think might accept them, the balance between these conflicting needs could tip in favor of the alters believing it seems safe enough to risk revealing themselves. So they might suddenly start communicating for the first time. If they think they can trust someone more than their host, they might briefly switch off their host's awareness, so that the host knows nothing of the conversation. So despite alters longing to end their isolation, it is rare for them to reveal themselves if they think they are likely to be rejected or thought lowly of. If you have alters, they will probably be able to hear your thoughts and words on some occasions, but not on others. So an alter could perhaps be enticed to converse with you if you were on several different occasions, to say to yourself something along these lines. If anyone can hear me, I want to apologize for any way I have offended you. I didn't want to believe you were real, but I now understand that I was wrong. I want to love and accept you and would value you sharing with me. Please speak to me. I suggest you hold off doing this, however, until you have completed the rest of this web page and the two web pages it leads to. It often helps if you speak out loud, or at least in an audible whisper, to your alters. If you suspect you might know the alter's name or something about the alter, use this information as you speak. This too might increase the chance of a reply. Even though having alters is a common, well-documented reaction to childhood trauma, it is usual for people upon first discovering that they have alters to find it deeply disturbing and seek repeated assurance that they are not going insane. In reality, for any of us who have alters, the discovery is a very healthy sign and a significant step towards far more peace, joy, and fulfillment than we have ever known.